This Be Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate, so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K through 12th grade curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. If you want to bring IXL to your school, you can learn more at IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, activity periods, RTI, therapy, and teacher appointments, and much more. With its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This is Dr. Karen, and you are listening to the De Facto Leaders Podcast on the Be Podcast Network, where I share up-to-date, evidence-based practices, my own experiences, and guest interviews designed to help pediatric therapists, educators, and aspiring school leaders design services that support social, emotional, and academic growth and set kids up for success in adulthood. Whether you want to learn effective strategies for your therapy session or classroom, be an influential leader on your team, or find creative ways to use your skills to advance in your career, I've got you covered. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Karen, and welcome to episode 154 of the De Facto Leaders Podcast. In this episode, I share a special Q&A session I did with the members of the Language Therapy Advanced Foundation members group. So this is in my Facebook group that is where all of my members of that program can get support and can get questions answered relating to the material I'm covered in the program. So most people in there are SLPs who want to be more effective in their language therapy. However, I do have some people from related disciplines and even a few parents. One of the biggest challenges with traditional professional development is that it's often a one-and-done format where you go to a lecture or a training and you don't really have a lot of built-in follow-up support. So that's why I structure the program in a way that allows you to get the help that you need. So you can watch a little bit of the training, go apply it, and then come back and get your questions answered. So that is part of what the purpose of the Facebook group is. So I get a lot of questions in the program, as well as just on my free content that I offer, about how to make the transition between preschool to school age, especially when it comes to language intervention, what language therapy activities are appropriate for younger children, and when to start direct intervention on linguistic skills like syntax. And while there's not a scripted protocol or curriculum that gives us all the answers, there's a wide body of research that shows how an effective intervention framework can work. So it helps us to answer questions like, should we focus on the big picture structure of language, like narrative structure, or should we focus on the pieces? Will kids get the big picture if they can't put the other components together at the word and sentence level? Or will developing the structure give them a process that will help them to develop those other components? In other words, will helping them to build story structure give them a chance to build those other skills like vocabulary and syntax? And in reality, It's a little bit of both. So that's why we have to understand the nuance and consider things like a child's age, what their language skills are, what their environmental expectations are when we're coming up with an intervention protocol. That also can help us to answer questions like, should we think about our intervention from a developmental perspective, making sure that kids are developmentally ready to learn certain skills before introducing them? Or should we think of it from more of a behavioral or cognitive linguistic perspective and operate from the assumption that providing exposure and opportunities and direct teaching will facilitate skills? Again, in reality, it's a little bit of both. We have to pull from multiple perspectives. So in this episode, I clarify some of that nuance, as well as how I've considered some of these things in the framework I teach. So I cover how to structure your therapy session, including how to set expectations, how to think about modeling and scaffolding, and where drill activities come into play. I also answer the question of, where does narrative language intervention apply to language therapy? How do we fit it in? Where does it fit in? Are some students too young for direct work on vocabulary and syntax? How do we make the transition from preschool to school-age language therapy? And then I wrap up by talking about the difference between describing a pattern of behavior versus diagnosing with a diagnostic label. And I talk about how Gestalt language processing fits into this all. So as I say in this Q&A session, it's really hard to talk about Gestalt processing without upsetting someone. So if I talk about it from the perspective of understanding evidence-based practice and research and what we know about what peer-reviewed research has shown us about language therapy and how we learn language, then typically people who use the framework that is outlined as far as the Gestalt language processing phases, typically I have a lot of them upset with me from the way that I explain it. But then if I talk about it at all, people from the other side are often upset with me that I'm even talking about it. And I actually share an article in this Q&A from the Informed SLP that I think did a really good job explaining the nuance as far as the difference between giving someone a specific diagnosis of how they have to learn language versus understanding that noticing certain behaviors and patterns that can help us to create goals for therapy and using a framework that can help us to plan our intervention. So there's a difference between rigidly putting someone in a category and assuming that they can and can't learn language a certain way versus just noticing patterns that they have and shaping those and helping to create functional communication. So it's really important that we understand those things because I have seen conversations on this topic get very heated. And I think that's unfortunate because especially when we're thinking about AAC users, there really isn't a lot of research in peer-reviewed studies that show us how we should work with students who have complex communication needs. So we definitely need to consider things like frameworks and case studies, but at the same time, we don't want to ignore the large quantity of research that already does exist for different populations that might benefit from language intervention and might need it in order to be successful. And just to clarify, when I talk about the framework for Gestalt processing, I'm talking about the 4 stages of Gestalt language acquisition that have been observed. So I don't get into all of that in this episode. So I highly encourage you to check the show notes for some links to additional resources that will give you more information. One of the other reasons I find it challenging to talk about this topic is because I always pronounce that word wrong. So I'm aware that I'm probably saying it weird in the episode that you're about to listen to. If you enjoy this session and you're interested in taking a look at Language Therapy Advanced Foundations, my program that helps SLPs and related providers to provide effective, research-based language intervention, then check out the program enrollment page at drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. Now, please enjoy this episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the live Q&A. Let me just double check to make sure that I am live and streaming, and we will get ready to go. I'm going to get started. So I had two things that I wanted to cover today, really three, but the main thing was that I did get a question about how to structure sessions. And there's a question about how you structure sessions just overall, regardless of how you're doing a therapy session. And then there's also the little nuance of thinking about specific protocols. So I am going to direct you to some places that you can find that in the dashboard and just a general recommendation for navigating the program. But then I'm also going to zoom out and go big picture and talk about how you can think about structuring your therapy sessions, because there are some frameworks you can use. You want to adjust them based on what you're actually working on, but there is a way that you can have some kind of a structure that you use so that your students have an expectation about what is going to happen in therapy. It's going to help you to keep things on track. So we'll talk about that first, and then I am going to talk about some principles for narrative intervention and how you can go about navigating the difference between working with kids who are younger and need more of a play-based approach or need something a little bit different than what we focus on in this program, and when you can make the shift to doing some of the things that we address in here as it applies to some of the specific linguistic concepts that we teach, because there is a little bit of a shift, especially when you're thinking about making the transition from preschool to kindergarten to school age and beyond that. So there is a difference, and there is a way that you can apply some of the things that you might learn in this program to working with younger kids, but it is going to look a little bit different. And then I did want to touch on gestalt processing a little bit, just because I do get questions about this periodically. And so I wanted to clarify the information on that and direct you to some other resources. So let's start with the question about how do we structure your session? So my first recommendation for you, if you are new to the program, is just that you start with module one and go through the program, because as I start with the first module, I do give you more of a bird's eye view and a high level overview of how all of the techniques are going to fit together and just the process of how you're going to want to cycle through things. But I do get into some specific protocols as you go through module 2, 3, 4, and so on. So if you're starting the program and you're not really sure how this is going to look, I recommend just that you just keep going through it. Now, some people like to watch one module at a time and try a little bit with their students at a time and then come back and do a little bit more. Some people like to watch it all the way through and then go back and then start to work through it with their students. There are about 10 hours or so of the core training. So you can do whichever one you want. Some people like to see the whole thing first and then go back and get into specifics. That's fine. Ideally, for your own learning, what's going to be best for you, which is, you know, why a lot of times when you go to a traditional seminar or professional development training and there's no opportunity to follow up with the person who's doing the training, why there's poor carryover. A lot of times you get the information and you need to go apply it in order to learn it and then come back and get some support. So the reason that I've structured things the way that I have is that it enables you to do that. So ideally what you want to do is, for example, you might watch module one, and that's kind of an overview. And so that you might not have a ton to apply after that. But when you do get into module two, I recommend that you try the techniques in module two. Do that for a few weeks, see what happens, see what questions come up, show up to these calls or ask questions in the group or in the comment sections below the videos in the dashboard, and get your questions answered that way. See what you can bring specific case study questions. And what that's going to help you do is
figure out what questions come up. A lot of times when we are in a seminar or when we're reading something or learning something for the first time, we think we understand it, and then questions come up during the application. And there's no way that I'd be able to anticipate all of those things. There's no way that I'd be able to tell you step by step exactly what's going to happen every minute of your session, which, believe it or not, people have actually asked me to do that. There's no way I'd be able to do that, but I want to give you a decision-making framework and a process, and then you go try it, you see what happens with your students, and then we can come back and troubleshoot. So that's how I recommend that you go through the program if you do have questions about how to frame your sessions. But I did want to give you some high-level frameworks just about how to create that structure.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning. Increased choice and agency for students. Dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flex time for any purpose. Want to see it for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
So I'm going to give you a couple different options, and you'll find that you might be able to use these together. And you might also find that one of them might work better for you during certain situations, and some might work better in other situations. So the first one that I'm going to mention to you is the explicit instruction framework, where you do I do, we do, you do. So it's modeling, guided practice, independent practice. So that is a good way to present really any skill, where you start off with modeling the skill for your students. So whatever I am showing you how to do, you model it for your students first, and then you give them the opportunity to do it, and you are giving scaffolding and prompting. You're doing any type of facilitation that's helping your students along, whether that be that you are modeling one response at a time and allowing the students to see what they can come up with on their own and kind of toggling back and forth as you're doing a longer activity, just to give them the opportunity to do it on their own, but then jumping in when they need support, whether it be starting a sentence for them and allowing them to finish it, whether it be pulling in other cues, maybe it's visuals, maybe it's written supports. It depends on the activity, but in that second phase, you're doing the activity together with the students. That's the guided practice phase. And then eventually you want to get to the point where you're stepping back and you're allowing the students to do it on their own. And again, that is Archer and Hughes, and that framework is called explicit instruction. Again, we do I do, we do, you do. So as you are doing that framework, you want to keep in mind that you don't want to be too rigid about it. So for example, you might model it for your students and then get to guided practice and realize, you know what, you might need to back up and do some more modeling. Or maybe you might move to independent practice and you realize that your students need to back up and do guided practice again. So there's some flexibility in it, but you want to make sure that you are thinking about that framework and using that general process. It's a good way to help you present skills to your students, especially those that need some explicit instruction. You will find with some of these language tasks with your students, there may be kids in the general education population that might just catch on their own, and they might be able to go right to guided practice or independent practice without the modeling. But your students are likely on your caseload because they need some more explicit instruction. So certain things that you think might be obvious to them, maybe they might need some explicit modeling. And remember that you can embed modeling into a lot of different things. It doesn't always have to be in some kind of a structured lesson, especially when you're just in the middle of an activity. You might model your own self-talk. You might have students, you might present them with an opportunity to try something. You don't necessarily have to structure each lesson with I do, we do, you do the entire time, but that's the process that you might use. So for example, some sessions you might be really focused on modeling a lot for them and you might get to a little bit of guided practice. And then as you practice that skill in subsequent sessions, you may get to the point where you do a little bit of modeling and then you might be able to move to guided practice more quickly. And then maybe you might get to the point where you do just a little bit of modeling or maybe not that much within a session and you can move to guided practice more quickly. So it's not necessarily always a situation where you have to do all three phases in a certain session. This can be something that's sort of spread out over time, but that's a general process for you to use when you're thinking about showing your students how to do skills that require explicit instruction. So I wanted to, as I'm presenting that framework, give you another way to organize some of the things that you're doing in your session, because there's the framework that you're using, and then there's the structure of a session. So obviously you want to make sure that you clarify the behavioral expectations with your students. And so this means having a certain routine that they do when they're coming into your room. And the reason that you want to do this is because certain things are things that you might have to explain to them at the very beginning when they're starting to learn the routine. But there are things that you don't want to necessarily have to explain with a lot of directions at the very beginning. You want students to start to learn that routine so you don't have to think about it a lot. And that will help with the transition to your session. And it will help with you not needing to give a lot of auditory directions at the very beginning for students. If they're used to doing a certain set of steps at the very beginning of a session and it's what they do every day and they're familiar with the activity, that's going to reduce the amount of time that you're spending getting everybody on the same page. So you want to think about that. And I know that in this program, I give you a bunch of different protocols. So you want to think about establishing a general set of expectations for therapy in general, but then within all of the different activities that I'm going to show you, you want to think about any specific processes or steps or things that students might have to do, directions they might have to follow within each individual activity. And as you do that activity and students get familiar with it, it is going to cut down on the setup time so that you can get more to the practice phase and actually get to more activities in your therapy. So think about how you can streamline some of those procedures at the very beginning so that you don't have to give as many auditory directions. It could be something as simple as what are they expected to do when they come into your room? What are they expected to do at the very beginning of the activity? Is it the same every time you do that task? If so, then that's something that you want to get them in the routine of doing without you having to explain it every time. So that's something you want to think about. And then I wanted to give you a couple different things to think about within that explicit instruction framework and things that you can think about doing as you are working through some of these more complex language tasks. And I'm going to give you a couple examples as well to give a little bit more context. So these are the things that I want you to think about. We have first, we have framing the session. Second, we have priming. Then we have applying. And then we have reviewing. So framing the session is just getting everyone's attention and explaining what's going to happen in the therapy session. And this can be something really quick at the very beginning. Again, if you do this every single time and you say something like, today we're going to work on describing words to each other so we can get used to how to learn words and how to explain words to other people. This is going to help us to learn vocabulary so that we can be better readers. Something like that that explains just a general idea of what you're working on and why you're working on it. Something really simple, and you want to get your students in the process and in the habit of listening to you say that at the very beginning of your session. So again, that's you framing the session and framing what's going to happen. And then obviously, if you have certain steps and things that are going to happen in the session, you can do that at that time as well. So that's where you want to start, is framing the session. What are we doing and why are we doing it? Then when we think about priming, this is where people get, I would say, where there's a little bit debate about what's functional, what's decontextualized, what's useful in therapy. Now, there are certain things that you can do in therapy that when used in isolation, they're not very functional, but when they're used to prime for something that is more functional, they can be useful. So think of it like, if, for example, I'm a runner and there are certain times when I do certain running drills. There might be certain things that I do to improve my form and to kind of give myself a neurological warm-up so that when I actually go and do my workout, which is a lot more involved, my body is primed and ready to go. So there's ways that you can do this for your students as well to get them neurologically primed and ready to go for whatever the task is that you're doing. One of the things that is commonly done in therapy that can be considered a priming exercise is naming categories or putting things into categories. The reason that this is very relevant to what we do in Language Therapy Advanced Foundations is because one of the strategies that I teach in the program is semantic feature analysis, where we're self-questioning and we're thinking about different semantic features and using those questions and features to retrieve information so that we can be more descriptive when we're explaining words to people. And that is something that we can use to also help us give more descriptive definitions. It makes us more aware of relevant information about vocabulary, which helps us to store that information more efficiently. And it also helps to build metalinguistic awareness so that when we encounter new words, we can pay attention to those features and start to look for them. It builds awareness. But one of the most common challenges that students have when doing semantic feature analysis, specifically when we're talking about nouns, is naming the category. That is one of the more difficult semantic features. For younger kids, kindergarten, first grade, you might see that they have a difficult time naming category without some facilitation or scaffolding. They will tend to kind of talk around a word and talk about it and give you some accurate information, but not necessarily give you the defining features and state the category. So as a result, we can use a priming exercise to get kids warmed up so that when we get to the more descriptive activity, when we're talking about different features of words, we've already practiced the category and that's fresh in students' minds. And so what we can do is kind of practice that skill so that when we get to the point that we're describing a word and we want students to think about the category, we can refer back to the exercise we did at the beginning. So how that might look is that you frame your session, just like I shared a few minutes ago, and then we might do a practice where we are having kids for just a few minutes, just something really quick, can be just a quick 1 to 2 minute thing where we practice naming categories. And within this, if you've never done it before, you can do an I do, we do, you do really quickly. Or if students are familiar with it, you can kind of just start off by doing it together. But you're all taking turns, either just generating categories or generating words that go into specific categories. So for example, you might give students some words and they might have to say what category those different items fall into. Or you might say, tell me three animals, for example. So you can kind of play around with it that way. And then you might move on to more of an application piece where you are pulling out specific vocabulary words and you're looking up information about them and describing them and doing that more detailed semantic feature analysis. And here is where we're applying. It's application because we're engaging in some active discussion about the words. We might be looking up information and things like that. We might just be practicing describing words to each other, and we might put it into a game format where one person has a word and they have to describe it to another person and see if we can help each other guess what the other person is talking about and tell them if they're being descriptive enough and things like that. So there's a lot of ways that we can take that and apply it and do something more contextualized. So that would be the applying phase. So that is where we can do some kind of a really structured activity, but then we follow it up with something that is application. I'm going to review what I just said because I know I just shared a lot. So first I said we're framing the session. Then I said we're priming. So doing some kind of a quick activity that is a little bit drill based, but is going to prime for something we're going to do later. We're not going to do that for the whole session. We're just going to do it as kind of a warm up. Then we're going to get into something that's more detailed, more requires more description and an engagement. So that's when we get into the applying phase. So I just shared an example of how we might do that for semantic feature analysis. Then the final thing that we want to do is reviewing. So here is where you might want to just do a quick wrap up. Maybe you are asking kids, what did you learn today? You are maybe reiterating what you said at the beginning when you framed the session. It might be something like, today we worked on describing words and look at how much information you were able to come up with when we thought about the questions that we were asking ourselves. So you want to do some kind of a review of what you did, maybe state something that students did well. You can also state something that they can work on next time. And, you know, we might say, sometimes we found that if we didn't look at our document or we didn't look up the answers, we had a difficult time. So next time we're going to practice this some more so that we can get better at it. So if there is something constructive that you need to say, we can reflect back on that and talk about what we might do differently next time. And you can get students involved in this process as well. So this can be something that you just do quickly at the end to reiterate what you did. Again, those four pieces are framing the session, priming, applying, and reviewing. And there's lots of different ways you can think about that framework. You can do it within a session. You can zoom out and maybe do it relating to some specific experience that you are preparing a student for, where maybe your whole therapy session is the priming, and then you're going to go out and send them into a situation where they're going to apply those skills, and then you come back and do a therapy session, and that's your review. So there's a lot of different ways that you can use this framework, but you can definitely use it in a very zoomed in way when you are thinking about your therapy sessions.
I wanted to take a quick break here to talk specifically about Language Therapy Advanced Foundations, because I know that as a listener, if you are not a member of the program, it might be kind of difficult to hear some of these things out of context and understand a frame of reference for what I'm talking about. So the Language Therapy Advanced Foundations framework is designed to help those students who really need support with language in order to help them build those high-level comprehension skills. We focus on things that will build vocabulary and support language processing. When we think about vocabulary, we're not just talking about naming and identifying words. We're also talking about other things like phonology, morphology, orthography, semantics, and syntax. So when we think about building metalinguistic awareness and teaching word learning strategies and thinking about language differently and using that framework to not just teach specific words, but teach specific linguistic components so that kids can start learning words independently, that's when we can actually make an impact with our intervention, especially considering that many of us maybe only have 30 to 40 minutes a week with students. Again, the framework is about supporting vocabulary using components of language like phonology, orthography, morphology, semantics, and syntax, and using tools like self-talk and supporting metalinguistic awareness so that kids can start to learn words on their own once they leave your therapy room. To learn more about the program, go to drkarenspeech.com/language therapy.
Okay, so that covers how we want to think about structuring our therapy sessions. I wanted to, before I wrap up, talk a little bit about narrative intervention. So you will see in module one, when I go through the success path video, I talk about how to cycle through the different phases in this program. And really what we do in here is work on some of those underlying language skills that are preventing students from engaging in that high level comprehension and expression. So a lot of times when students are struggling with stating the main idea or inferencing or writing with nice, complete, complex sentences, it's relating to vocabulary and syntax. You need to be able to put those pieces together in order to understand the big picture. So we're really focusing on those in this program. And this is particularly relevant for those school-age students who are not making progress with comprehension. Now, there's a chicken or egg debate here, because there's the one side of the debate that says if you don't have the pieces together, like if you don't understand one sentence at a time, or if you don't understand the words in the sentence, it's going to be hard for you to comprehend what you're listening to and what you're reading. So if you're trying to tell a narrative or read a narrative or listen to a narrative, it's going to be hard for you to comprehend if you don't have all those pieces in place. But then there's the other debate or the other argument that says if you don't know how to structure things, you're not going to know how to fit all those details and put all those other little pieces in place and structure your narrative. So which one is correct? Well, they're both kind of correct. So I wanted to direct you to an article that was just published. Actually, this was published in 2020 by Spencer and Peterson. It is in Language, Speech, and Hearing Services in Schools. It's called Narrative Intervention, Principles to Practice. And this is just it's a very nice descriptive article of some principles that you can use when doing narrative intervention. And the first principle is that students need to have that high-level structure of narratives. They need to be able to retell events and stories in order for them to start practicing using those complex sentence types. So that sounds like it is the opposite of what I'm teaching in this program, but really it isn't. Because if I were to work with a younger student who is in preschool, for example, and I can tell that they're struggling to retell narratives and they don't have that structure, then I would actually start with the narrative intervention. Now, if I were working with an older student who's maybe in kindergarten and they have that basic story structure in place, but I can tell that they need some work with syntax and vocabulary, I would flip-flop and I would really add an additional component to my intervention. So I would continue to work on narratives, but I would add some intervention cycles that are more focused on those specific sentence types, which is essentially the shift that I'm teaching you how to make in Language Therapy Advanced Foundations. A lot of people come into this program and they're doing a lot of those high level activities that are focused on narratives, and they're finding that their students are not making progress. So we want to keep the narrative intervention. That piece is really important. But we want to make sure that we add those other structural components, which is what I teach you how to do in this program. Now, I will say that a lot of times when people are interested in joining and they're saying, you know what, most of my caseload is preschool, I don't really have many students who are older than kindergarten age, then I would say that they probably would need to do more of a narrative intervention focus with their treatment. And yes, it could be useful if they have some older students on their caseload to learn this framework. And also, if they're thinking about syntax as they're working on narratives, to kind of pull it in and make sure that they're modeling some complex sentence types. But I would embed it into that narrative intervention. And then as students get older, kindergarten, first grade, as they start to build some of those narrative skills, that's when we want to start really focusing on some more intensive work at the sentence level when students are able to engage in that back and forth dialogue with you, retell stories. Then they have a little bit more to work with so that they're able to benefit from some of the intervention that we're doing in this program. Now, I know I've also said the opposite can be true in certain cases, especially if you have those students who are in elementary school, they are working on reading comprehension, and they're not making progress. Then those students who are trying to work on that high level inferencing and stating the main idea and problem solving, a lot of times those students do not make good progress with those high level strategies unless they get that direct work on those language components, like the syntax, like the vocabulary, some of that semantic work that we do in this program. So you can kind of see that we need to consider a developmental hierarchy to a certain extent, but we also need to consider exposure. And we want to think about this from multiple models, from both a behavioral, from a cognitive linguistic, and also from a developmental perspective. So we want to think about this from different angles and understand the nuance here. Now, I will say that because narratives are very important, they are included in the generalization phase that I teach in Language Therapy Advanced Foundations. Again, I'm keeping that component. I'm just adding additional things in the way that I cycle through my intervention. So, if you're coming into this program and you've been working on narratives, that's great. Keep that. But we're going to add some of those other things. And that's what I teach in those first modules of this program. I show you how to cycle those in. And then we're going to cycle over to the narratives as well. Because when we're thinking about therapy, just as I described at the beginning, we do want to have that mix of things that are priming and that are a little bit more drill and practice, but we just want to make sure that we follow it up with that application and we're not doing the same thing the entire time. We actually need a nice, healthy blend of both so that students get enough intensity in practice, but also so that they give that up, get that opportunity to apply those things. So that's how we want to think about it. So below this video, I am going to link to a couple things. I'm going to link to an episode that I did previously on de facto leaders on my podcast. And actually, at the time that I recorded this episode, it was called Are They 18 Yet? So don't be confused when you listen to it. But it is episode 64 called Are Kids Ready to Work on Complex Sentences in Early Elementary School? So I give some additional context on how we can embed that work on complex sentences and think about making that transition when we're thinking about preschool versus school age. So I talk about some of the nuance there in episode 64. And then I also wanted to share the narrative intervention article. And again, that is on the ASHA website. And I will link to that below this video as well. So as we're thinking about high level versus putting the pieces together, it is relevant to mention gestalt processing. I do get questions about that on my webinar periodically about, does this work for autistic students? Does this work for gestalt processors? So, this topic is a little bit difficult to discuss because no matter what way I explain it, I usually have people upset. But it is really important that we understand the nuance in this because we want to understand what is evidence-based, but we also want to understand that there are certain principles and frameworks that can be clinically useful for some of those populations where we don't have a lot of peer-reviewed research, or I would say peer-reviewed research with big controlled designs and a lot of participants, just because certain populations are difficult to study. And also, we want to understand that there is research and strategies, and then there are frameworks that we can use in conjunction with that research and those strategies. So the first thing that I want to say is that there is just saying that someone is a gestalt processor, that is not a diagnosis that's recognized by the DSM. So it's because it's not a specific diagnosis, we don't technically have criteria for identifying when someone is a gestalt processor. Because of that, I don't use it as a diagnostic label. What it is a description of a behavior. We can notice that a student is using a lot of gestalt processing. Maybe they're using a lot of echolalia and they're doing a lot of scripting. So if they're doing that, then we know that that is meaningful communication and it does make sense to lean into what they're doing and shape that and use it to facilitate more functional communication. So it is relevant that students might have that pattern and we definitely want to leverage that and use it and use a framework that can help us to go through the different phases and help us to plan goals for treatment. So we can use a framework and then within that framework, use evidence-based practices and techniques that we know can help facilitate language. So we can use a framework in order to shape that echolalia and shape what the student is doing, but we can't technically say that that is a specific diagnosis. So I caution people against rigidly putting students into a category and assuming that they can't learn a certain way. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they won't ever be able to benefit from some of those, what people consider to be analytic language processing strategies. We don't know for certain that they will never benefit from that. There's actually evidence that a lot of students who do demonstrate some of those patterns actually do benefit from some of that language facilitation. That being said, if you notice that students are using a lot of echolalia, then yes, you can certainly use those phases that are outlined as far as the different types of gestalt processing. It's certainly something that we can use. And as I was saying before, when it comes to students who are non-speaking AAC users, we don't have as much research in that area. So if there is a framework that is useful clinically, it helps you to come up with treatment goals, then by all means, it makes sense to use it. I did want to mention an article that was written by the Informed SLP that explains the nuance of this topic really well. It explains what the research says and what we can do as far as clinical decision making. And basically it says what I just explained, that no, technically we can't use this as a diagnostic label and we don't know for certain that students have to learn a certain way, but that the framework is certainly useful clinically for certain students. So what I typically say to people and how I tease through this topic is that it's similar to what I said with narratives, is that some students might need an additional framework, especially if they are not able to engage in a back and forth dialogue and they're not using, if you are noticing that they're using a lot of echolalia, it might make sense to move through that framework before you are using something like what I would teach in this program. So kind of like narratives where you need some structure in place in order for you to work on some of those things like complex syntax. You need to be able to have a student who's able to tell you kind of retell you some basic events. No, their narrative structure does not have to be perfect for you to work on complex syntax, but you need something in place for you to work with. So I would think about that the same way that I would think about narrative intervention. For some students, if you know that they're not really engaging in a lot of back and forth conversation with other people and you need to structure some of those things and help build some of those basic sentence types, then yes, it makes sense to use a framework like that. So I will link to that Informed SLP article as well, because I think it was a really good summary of what the research says and how we can think about this. So I hope that this helps to answer some of those questions. Again, what we covered today was how to structure your sessions from a high level, how to think about making the shift from early language and narrative intervention to working on complex syntax, and then how things like gestalt processing can fit into all of this. So let me know if you have any questions. Just leave them in the comments below. I'm happy to answer them. And if you have additional questions, you can always start a separate thread in the group. Thanks, everybody, and have a good night.
Thank you so much for listening. If you're interested in checking out Language Therapy Advanced Foundations, if you are an SLP and you want a better framework for language therapy, if you have students who have been working on inferencing questions and stating the main idea and WH questions, following directions goals, and you're not seeing them make progress, and sometimes you feel like you're kind of just guessing or grabbing random games off your shelf, I know that that is something that happens because I've been there. So if any of that sounds familiar, check out Language Therapy Advanced Foundations, my program for speech pathologists and other related providers who want a framework for language intervention. To learn more about the program, you can go to drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. As always, if you found this session useful, then feel free to share this episode with your friends or your colleagues. And it helps me out so much if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts, whether that be Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcast directory you prefer. And then finally, if you have a suggestion for a guest, or if you are interested in being a guest on the De Facto Leaders podcast, please email me at talktome@drkarenspeech.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, improve students' performance on state assessments without just teaching to the test? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-based teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's IXL.com/BE. There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into the master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out My Flex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.